Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the War Man Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the War Man. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lorddaul.podbean.com. I try to upload an episode to it once a week. I've been on a little bit of a gap here. I apologize for that. Also, the other way and the most efficient way to get the podcast is to go to the iTunes search engine and enter War Man Kickfighting Show, and the show pops right up. So, first of all, I want to apologize. I failed. I was about 2 weeks away from having an episode every week from October all the way through the end of the year. Then I just got too busy with fights and running the gym, and I just didn't get around to, you know, studying the content enough to give you guys a really good show. Also, this is normally the week that I put out the year in kickfighting highlight. I usually do it this week. I've postponed that. I'm going to have to do it put it out next week, but don't worry, it's coming. I'm going to go ahead and commit to that, but I wanted to start off with the apology. But I'm going to go ahead and then turn the corner and get right into the good stuff. This is my year in review episode for 2017. So if you've never heard about kickboxing outside of seeing a video clip that popped up on Facebook or something you saw on your Twitter wall, I hope that this episode is a good opportunity for you to refer a friend to it, for you to have the opportunity to explore, revisit the kickboxing world if you've been in it, you know, before, so you can have a good idea of what went on in the year, how the year went, how people responded, you know, just some of the big KOs, some of the big upsets. I really wanted to explore the year kickboxing, so for those of you who are new, welcome, and I hope you enjoy my kickboxing podcast. And also, for those of you who've been with me for a long time, let's go ahead and revisit this year in kickboxing, because it really did have a lot of good content and a really, really fun year. Despite the fact that, you know, year in, year out, you're going to hear kickboxing's dead, kickboxing's not doing this, not doing that. Kickboxing's doing really good stuff, and we're getting better all the time. So I'll go ahead and get into it. First of all, I want to start off with just some of the stories of the year, some trends that I'm seeing, both good and bad. I'll go ahead and start off with the emergence of kickboxers going to MMA and MMA fighters going to kickboxing. And it's interesting because it's happened forever. And if you're a prize fighter in this game, you just want to make as much money as you can. So if you have the opportunity to compete and make money, do it. Go out there, be a prize fighter, make money, see your pockets get bigger. Whether it's, you know, you've got a kickboxing opportunity this month, boxing next month, MMA after that. If you're skilled enough to do them all, do them all. You know, if you're skilled enough to do it. But we're starting to get some notable names go in both directions, for better or for worse. I'll go ahead and give you an example. Israel Adesanya is one of the better fighters on the planet. One of the better fighters on the planet. A guy who just came up short in his glory, in his bid for the Glory Championship. He has just signed recently to fight mixed martial arts for a career. Now that he's in the UFC, UFC has a no-compete clause, so you only fight for the UFC when you get there. They do not allow you to do both. So he's a high-level guy. It's definitely, I would say he's probably the most high-level kickboxer to go to MMA since Mirko Krokop, as far as the level of fighter that he was. Now, will he have Mirko's impact in mixed martial arts? You know, I'm not saying that's true, because Mirko was definitely, I mean, Mirko was the man. You know, like when he went over to Pride, even though he had never accomplished one of their significant, you know, titles, he won the, you know, the open weight championship, but that was a tournament. He's never considered the heavyweight champion of the world, and he did lose in what I still consider the biggest heavyweight fight in the history of mixed martial arts. He lost to Fedor, but his resume was legit when he was in kickboxing, and he had a run very similar to Adesanya. He came one fight short. He was stopped in his bid for the K-1 World Grand Prix against Ernesto Hoos, but that was after several attempts and a really good career. I would say Adesanya is the best fighter to go into mixed martial arts since then. Robin Van Roosmalen also said that he's going to make the jump. Now, this isn't a slight on Robin, not saying that he's not, you know, that he's good or bad, or he's not as good as, Israel when I talk about the significance of Israel, because Robin definitely was one of the better fighters in the world. He was probably the best 143 fighters in the world. 143 pounds featherweight for Glory. But when I look at resume wise, what Adesanya was also doing in mixed martial arts as well as doing, you know, his thing in kickboxing, I think Robin hasn't done that quite yet. But Robin's resume is legit. He's very, very skilled, and he's made that move into mixed martial arts full time. Go ahead and look at it in reverse. We've got Bigfoot, who, you know, competed, Bigfoot Silva, fought for the UFC title twice, losing both times to Cain Velasquez, has a win over Alistair Overeem, had an okay career, but clearly at this stage, he had suffered several stoppages, losses when he left the UFC, and then he moves into kickboxing, and then right off the bat, he gets Rico Verheerven, and Rico, of course, shows the level of skill separation wasn't even close. Thiago Silva, he had a much more successful bid. I was able to matchmake his fight when he came to Glory. It was a good fight on both sides for both guys, but he really showed some of the kickboxing skills. He put the time in. He went out to Mike's gym. He's committed to this full. He's a name to look out for. Down the road, I would love a talent like a Edson Barboza if he ever considered wanting to do kickboxing. He's already got this style. You look at not just Barboza, but if you look at someone like Jose Aldo, I'm trying to think of a couple others, just people who I just think style-wise, they plug right into, you know, kickboxing. It's awesome to see how many people could do it, so it makes me wonder what the future could be, but definitely that transition of MMA guys going to kickboxing, kickboxing guys going to MMA, it's fun. Now, right now, of course, it's very, very clear to me that the mixed martial arts guys who are doing it are usually doing it as they see that they have less money to make high level in MMA. So then they're kind of translating it into kickboxing. And kickboxing, it's reversed. They've done as well as they could do in kickboxing, and now they're going to MMA. So it's like same thing, but the mentality is different and the ages are different. So we'll definitely see what comes from it down the road. It's just something to look out for. Rico also doing mixed martial arts on the side, so should be a lot of fun. Next one of the stories of the year is the weird year that Infusion Kickboxing had. Infusion finally rounded off their tournament format where they did kind of like a league, and they had some of their biggest stars all in it. Before, the way they did it, when I thought that they were on fire, is number one, in February they had their big fight card, and that fight card was always a lot of fun. I always put on some of the better all action cards that you're going to see. They developed young talent that you didn't know about. Jiraiya, who just signed with Glory in the last few days, he was birthed in their rookies season. He started off on rookies, put on some great performances there. They moved him into getting him super fights, moved him as a kickboxer, just on their main, on their regular card, moved him into main events. He won their title at a lower weight class. I can't remember the exact weight. I know that was under 154, but he became their champion. Then they had Ilias Belaid, same thing, very, very all action, very, very good fighter, all action style, and burst right from the beginning from them, a guy who you really didn't hear about regularly until you saw him fight for Infusion. Iman Barlow, another person who, again, she was already established, but she made more of a name when she fought for them. The shows that they did in England were selling really, really well. They were doing such good things. And then this year, their tournament, it suffered injuries. It suffered, they had an incident where Jiraiya got into it with one of the refs, and then he got into a fight with the ref right outside of the ring. And then we had the situation with several guys pulling out of tournament, whether injury or whatever the case was, whether just other opportunities. But the whole field that they had put together for their tournament, it's just, it looked like a great idea, but it went so long that by the time we got to the end, it's like all the luster was out of it. Definitely shout out to Tayfun Oskin, who outside of a cut or injury loss he had to Johnny Risco, he did his thing. He was successful. He won big fights. He's all action style. He's definitely a very entertaining fighter, but for the most part, the joy and the excitement that we had going into that tournament was gone by the end. And worse, they'd used most of their biggest stars. So after it was done, you're really only talking about Typhoon. Whereas maybe if they could do it over, they could do several different tournaments and then have hopefully their champions be the winners of it at the end. But we'll see what happens. They've got another big event coming up this February. They're still doing good things, but the tournament did not work out the way that we thought. The league that they put together did not work out the way that it was first imagined. Building upon that, the ideas of corruption, one of the worst situations that you're ever going to see, where Eric Boukone, or Boukone, hope I'm pronouncing that right, I believe it's Boukone, gets a victory over Ibrahim El-Bustadi by KO earlier in the year. They do the rematch, and El-Bustadi, who some people thought that he had, you know, he's definitely a talented guy, but some people had wondered how he'd been moved and match made and so on. So they do this rematch. Boukone clearly drops him, and then you get what is unmistakably a 43-second count between the ref trying to get separation, between the ref deciding to pick up his fingers and do the count, between the refs giving a break, a push separation. It was so blatantly obvious that even, you know, people all over sports media, particular in combat sports with boxing MMA sites, kickboxing sites, they're all picking it up, and they're just showing just the clip of how long this count was. And you combine that with the, you know, the Jiraiya situation, it just seemed like they run themselves into a situation where their stars, who they really want to push, were coming upon bad times, and their response to it wasn't that great. You know, Jiraiya had this weird situation where it sounded like he was suspended after hitting the ref, and next thing you know, he fights. So it's like, wait a minute, shouldn't you be honoring here in the States? If one of our guys gets suspended in Texas, he can't go fight in Nevada. Nevada will honor Texas. So if you guys have a, and he can't go fight in Canada, because Canada will honor America. So if you have this happen with Jiraiya, an athlete who I love and I want to compete, I thought that the punishment was a little high anyways, but he's a fighter that I love and I want to compete. But I think that if you ask people, you ask the world, what message is sent if you say to a guy, okay, you did something illegal, but we'll go ahead and use you again because you're a guy that we push. Well, you're struggling with this guy, so maybe the ref will side on your side a little bit. It's hard because I'm not saying that these things 100% happened. I'm not saying that Infusion didn't 100% put in the right effort, go to the right commission to try to get the right kind of law put in against these athletes, you know, as far as the Jiraiya situation. Maybe they turned it over to the commission. That's how the commission responded. And once the commission said they weren't going to enforce it in certain jurisdictions, they did their job as a fight promotion and they used the athlete that they wanted to use. Maybe that was what went on with that situation. Maybe the situation with Boustadi was that they did not choose the ref. They didn't tell the ref to do that long count. The only thing that I'm saying is more people are talking about the buzz from the Boustadi thing than the buzz from the injury, from the fight afterwards, than are talking about your all-action kickboxing stars. And that's what we got to get back to. Because Infusion, I mean, they started off the year with Ilias Bulaid versus Zogri Zachariah, ZZ. So, like, that was their start to the year. So they started off fire, like all action, all excitement. Like that was their year. That February card was what it was supposed to be. And then as the year went on, they got away from some things. Iman Barlow was headlining cards in London and doing a really, really good job as far as how they pushed her and how entertaining her style is. But I didn't see her televised as much. And not to mention, and this is the biggest thing, they used to stream their shows for free online. And then they went to a system where everything, I mean, even their undercard fights, they're trying to sell them for a monthly subscription. And I don't know if it's profitable for them, but I hope whatever the profit is, it covers how many people are not watching them. Because I remember doing an MMA kickboxing podcast a couple years ago, And right before I did it, I was online and I was like, hey, this kid Ilias Belaid is going to fight. This is like 3 or 4 years ago. And I was like, he's about to fight. I put the stream up. I was like, hey, go to the stream right now. Watch this guy. One of the guys watching me goes, hey, I see the talent that you're talked about. And when I did the podcast, we both talked about that guy. And we talked about how, you know, I will post a video or a stream of a video if you're not doing anything on Saturday for kickboxing. I was all about selling kickboxing and kickboxing athletes, and that was an easy avenue. I'm not sure what it is business model wise, but Infusion, you guys got to give us access to your content. That's it. We just need to see your content on something. The way it's going now with the way your website's run and the way the stream opportunities are given to us, we're just not getting to see you. And you really do have a good product. We just got to get you out there more. So hopefully this can be a bounce back year for Infusion. Create more stars, refocus on the rookies, and see if they can find another Belaid, another Jiraiya, and push them to the forefront. I'm going to finish the show talking about it. They really did have one of the bigger moments of the year, but it happened in silence with Andy Semelier. So I'll talk about him a little bit more later. But definitely, Infusion, I'm hoping for a big, big year where we push Semelier as one of the better fighters on the planet. Going to go ahead and finish up with two other big news and notes things for me. You know what? Let's just go ahead and make this episode longer. Three other stories from the year. The K-1 heavyweight tournament returned. It wasn't what it was when we were younger. You know, when I say younger, I'm talking about anybody who fell in love with the sport from, you know, mid to late 90s, early 2000s. It doesn't have that feel. Like, I truly felt like the person who won the K-1 World Grand Prix was adding to their resume for where they stood in the history of all of kickboxing. So when Remy Bonjasky got his third K-1 World Grand Prix, I was like, they can't deny him now. Because all the people who hated him for having two and said that he won lesser tournaments, all of them had to kiss the crown after he got that third one. They hated the way he got the third one, but in the end, he had three and he was winning the fight. He had scored a down against Badahari before the whole situation with the stomp on the ground. But it's not like he was losing before that happened. He was winning before that happened. But he stopped, his injury stoppage, but he was winning the fight. And he stopped Jerome LeBanner before it. And he stopped Gokhan Saki before it. So really, that couldn't have come about any better in terms of like how great the tournament was for him. The only thing, as far as the build-up to it, if he could get that stoppage, that would have added on to it. But I bring that up as an example of, that was his third K-1 World Grand Prix, and because it was Saki, and because it was LeBanner, and because it was Hari, people couldn't say what they said before. Oh, you only beat Musashi. You know, you won a lesser tournament. He did the year tournament that the K-1 World Grand Prix put together. It made people realize how special some of these athletes were. And I really think that, you know, you look at the Arts is 3, Semi Seltz's, you know, 3. I think the fourth one came when, did he get 4? Yeah, I think it was 4. I'm trying not to include the Glory one in there. I think it was 4. I'm just going off the top of my head. Ernesto Hoost's 4. I think when you look at that and you say, okay, that's what the K-1 World Grand Prix meant. This guy is the baddest kickboxer on the planet. We got to watch this guy. When they brought the tournament back, they didn't have the best kickboxers on the planet to their disposal. Glory Kickboxing has them under their umbrella. They have Rico, who is the clear king of kickboxing as far as the heavyweight division goes. He is the man of the hour. With that said, they were still able to put together a pretty good tournament field, but they put together with guys who I would more consider light heavyweights. And you look at these guys, and they put on a tournament. They had two standout guys, and the two standouts met. Antonio Plazibet was their, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, was your K-1 heavyweight tournament champion, and he gets a victory over Ibrahim Elbouni. Elbouni had already fought in a single fight and won by stoppage for K-1 earlier in the year, just kind of showed that they were going in the direction of using these guys. And then they put together a pretty solid tournament field of guys who weighed around, you know, 93 kgs, you know, at the most. And it wasn't the big guys that they had before in the past. But if you grew up with the K-1 World Grand Prix, the idea that the heavyweight Grand Prix, the idea that it's back in any way or form is a step in the right direction and a sign of the health of kickboxing, because that really is a big reason why I'm sitting here doing the podcast. Without question, I wouldn't be here without the K1 World Grand Prix. As much as I love kickboxing, K1 helped me to make the world smaller, if you will, into a world that I can understand, as opposed to a what are they doing in this country, what are they doing in this country, kickboxing, what's going on in Thailand, what's going on in Japan. That's all I had. But K1 made it smaller, made it simpler. Okay, just follow the guys who fight in this tournament and then see what tournaments that they are, see what organizations they fought before they got to this, this level. And then I can get introduced to more guys. So when I first got started, Super League was something that I found out about because Albert Krause, who was the K1 champion, fought in Super League sometimes. So then I go watch Super League, and then that introduced me to another level of stars. K1 helped me to understand and get a handle and get a really good understanding of the kickboxing world and how it funneled towards being K1 champion. So when K1 returned, it just shows that a brand that looked like it was in bad shape slowly focused on the Japanese market, went ahead, put together tournaments with smaller, athletes, and now even the emergence of, Rikuya and Tenshin Nasukawa, something I'll talk about a little bit later. And then, of course, Takuru. This young, that they built their brand back, and now there's excitement. They've got several titles. They got a heavyweight champion now. They just did it the right way, and it was the long way, but it was the right way to get it done. So shout out to them. Really, really happy to see the K1 heavyweight tournament back. Adding on to this, I'm going to go ahead and move some talking about K1, talking about the old stars still hanging out. And I was going to do this write-up, and I might still do a write-up, but I asked myself the question one day. Do I still think that the guys who were the best fighters in the 2000s would be the best fighters from 2010 to 2020? How do I think a Jotunklei would fare against some of the better guys in the world? He's not right now. The guys he's fought in China have been all right. All right are just serviceable. You know what I'm saying? No ones that I would say is good or really talented. This is no slight on them. I'm just saying their skill level compared to him isn't there quite yet. May never be there, but it's not there compared to him. So I look at Jotunklei, and I look at Bukau, and I look at Petrosian, and I go, man, just a year ago, they brought in Jordan Watson, still serviceable, really talented, kickboxer for his division, and Petrosian got a stoppage over him. And then earlier this year, Petrosian's been fighting in single fights throughout the years, and he's been winning all the single fights that he gets. He headlines shows, Italy. Not traveling as much as he did before, but he still headline shows, makes good bit of money. Bukau still fighting. Bukau went 7-0, I want to say, this past year. So when I look at that, I'm like, okay. And not to mention what I talked about earlier last year and then the year before, he beat the Dylan Salvador, who challenged for the glory title, and he beat him clean. And I'm thinking, could Yod, Bukau, and Petrosian still beat the best guys in the world right now? And part of me feels they could. I feel like if you were to add them to your glory mix or your K1 mix, they'd have a lot of success. I think all three would have trouble with, I guess it just kind of depends on whose style's in front of you. But for me, if I look at a guy, talent-wise, like, Alim Dabayev's a little bit bigger, but like any old star would struggle with Alim Dabayev right now. He's just, doing amazing things. He's a really, really strong fighter. He's really, really talented. I definitely think that he's there. Chingiz Alazov will give all three of those guys some trouble. He's really, really talented. So I don't want to eliminate all the new guys from having success against these guys, but I do think that they would still be competitive at this stage, which is amazing. For your prime to be 10 years ago and then for you to still be serviceable at the highest level right now, I think that's saying something. So shout out to them. I will now finish with my last point as far as stories of the year in kickboxing, and that is the youth movement. And the reason why this is important is people need to know how healthy kickboxing is. Every combat sport's always going to be about new stars and young stars. You know what I'm saying? Like, there is just, it's fun to listen to the Conor McGregor story because he didn't want to fight anymore because he's that frustrated with it. And then he gets a call and says, how would you like to fight in 9 weeks in your UFC debut I believe it was Sweden. And then the story goes from there. And it just starts with just getting a young star. And then all of a sudden, you know, Japan gets a Tenshin Nasukawa. And you hear about him, and then you see some of his early fights. And the biggest thing is he just keeps winning by stoppage. And then someone posted on Instagram, and I saw it on Instagram, and I also saw it on Twitter. But just the other day, I just saw this great video that shows him as a young person, and he's like in some sort of sparring match, and he's just having fun. Handstand kicks, spinning back kicks, just doing all things, but he's doing it so lightning fast, and he must be, you know, 14 in the video. There is something about seeing it before everyone else, and seeing people young, and seeing the star before they become a star. There's something said for that, and he really did show these talents, and then he gets these opportunities to fight, and the next thing you know, Perfect time. As far as time and place. Perfect timing as far as the need to see another young star. He comes out there doing both MMA and kickboxing, but mostly kickboxing Muay Thai, and he puts on a show, a promotion. KO starts, and they heavily push him out there, and he gets these KO stoppages, and he has this speed, and he's got this charisma, and then he wins a tournament. And for Tenshin, Tenshin wins this tournament for the MMA promotion Rizin. And when he gets the win for Rizin, right away the focus is on, and everyone talks about, and he brings up that he wants to fight with Takuro. Takuro, of course, the man right now as far as the lighter weight goes. KO fighter, brings it. Defense, not the best because he's looking for the big offensive scores, but that makes, we love vulnerable heroes in this game. Very, very important. So shout out to him and what he brings to the table and who he is a kickboxer and who he is as a talent. I am really all about what he is and what he can do as an athlete and as a fighter. And here comes Nasukawa. New young star wants that. Now we've got another big fight. And that is the key to kickboxing. Always have big fights. And the moment you get Badr Hari versus Rico over here, and now the question is, what's the next big fight? And here is another one. Because we had a tournament format before, we didn't have to worry about what the next big fight was. We just knew that there was going to be a big tournament. So we always had that every year. But now that's the question. And Tenshin Nasukawa versus Takuro, two young fighters, that's the future is there. Let it simmer. They don't have to do that right away. Build towards that fight. And I think that could be a big one for us. Andy Semelier, as we talked about before, comes out, bursts on the scene, went 8-0 last year. Huge win over Superbon. Beats Jordan Watson. Beats Muhammad Kamal. Like, this guy is just, and 22 years old. What was it? Asbiri, who had the big win over Masaki Nori at the end of the year. Masaki Nori, who had the big win over Kyle Fairtex. It's just, there are so many young, talented fighters that are now taking over kickboxing. I mentioned Alim Nabayev. This is it. This is our future. You know, Bestati, of course, doing this thing for glory. 19, 20 years old. He fell, you know, finally had his first K1 or glory loss just a couple, you know, about a month ago. But man, this kid brings it. And the sport is always going to be healthy. Vlad Tuanov from Russia. The sport is always going to be healthy with young stars like Vlad. Vlad, who also went 6-0, 7-0 last year, went over Masaru Glunder and that. We've got so many young stars that are going to push this sport forward. So be excited about the new young athletes that I think are going to take the sport into the future. So we're going to go ahead and break into some of the awards, and I'm going to go ahead and talk about all the candidates and choose who I felt were the best. I was so tempted to just 100% give. First of all, the female fighter of the year, it's just, it's there's no contest there. Anissa Mexen, she had another undefeated year. Adding to it, I was there in New York where she beats Tiffany Von Seuss. She's just so skilled. And then after beating Tiffany Von Seuss, like 2 weeks later, she was in a boxing match. She's a prize fighter. Anissa Mexen wants to fight and wants to compete as much as possible. She's stayed healthy. She's got a good style. She throws clean combinations. She's got really good defense, not just with her blocking, but with her movement. She's something to behold in this sport. Like, it's been a joy to watch her emerge and be one of the better fighters. And to think, another shout out to Infusion. She is birth of, she's a good fighter, but then she did to the Infusion reality show, and she won the female tournament there. And it just shows what they were doing as far as star building back in the road. It's just the keep up, follow up. That's where the struggle is. But Mexen went on to have a big year last year, debuting in glory earlier in the year, winning the world title by the end of the year. Anissa Mexen, you're clear female fighter of the year. As for the men, there were a lot of fun candidates, and there were a lot of people who are like, okay, who do I feel is going to be the most entertaining option here? Who do I feel is going to be the best fighter here? I kind of sat there and I struggled with it for a little bit because there were so many good options. Mirtha Gruenhart was going to be my runaway winner when I first put this list together. He had a good year. He had the wins over Tong Jai, which was a stoppage. Alan Sitson, the Herat Gregorian K, of course, that everybody's talking about, with the weird kind of turn walk away, and then the cleanup shot where Gregorian's not in it, walks off, and then Mirtha Gruenhart cleans him up with the right hand. And then you had the Cedric Dumbe win, split decision, which I watched live in Chicago. Mirtha Gruenhart is just a testament to working hard and always believing in yourself and never giving up on the work that you put into the gym, never giving up on the work that you put in, despite the fact that he came up short against Dumbe in the past, lost Rico lost Nicky Holtzgen all those times. Mirtha Gruenhart just stuck with it, and he became the champion of the world by the end of the year. It's awesome stuff. Who knows if he's going to be the champion, you know, by the end of this year. All I know is he worked so hard to get there. He took losses, fought back. He became the champion of the world. Chingiz Alazov, big-time victory in the return, you know, the K1 Max tournament, beating Yoshiro Kido in the final. Big-time awesome KO over Jordan McKay. Before that, he's another one. Artur Kashenko continued his streak. Artur Kashenko is now 17, has won 17 straight fights. So he had another undefeated season. Still, and every time he gets those opportunities, when a guy like, you know, a guy from Glory or a guy from Infusion goes and fights, you know, and him in China, he bests them clearly. He's a very, very talented fighter, even at this stage in his career. And if there was one thing that I would say for him, you know, as far as moving forward and what I'd like to see, I would love it if he returned to Glory to fight the best guys in the world and possibly get a chance at their title. Probably getting paid too much money in China, but man, I would love to see him to return to that. He's that talented of a guy. He's a special athlete, a lot of fun to watch. And he's had more styles than anybody that I can think of in my time watching kickboxing. Abdallah Azbiri, I mentioned before, he had victory over Nori. He had the victory over Halali. He's just a very good fighter. I want to see more from this young guy. Didn't do enough to win it, but I really, really liked it. Vakhadov had two fights. You know, Artem Vakhadov, the Glory champion, beating Machado, beating Calavari. Definitely good stuff there. Robin van Roosmalen had the Embry KO, and he defended the title in his hometown. Not enough resume-wise for me. Rico Verheerven, as I mentioned before, he fought three times, won all three fights. Beating, you know, Bigfoot, and then, of course, the redemption match that he did with Ben Sadiq. And you guys, of course, remember my last podcast. I was so high on the way that victory happened because he went through some adversity, and he's good at it. Rico Verheerven has lost round one and come back and won fights before. But that night in particular, he came back and won by stoppage. So good stuff there. I loved the work of all these guys. I really, really did. But on the biggest scale, who do I think deserves this? I really broke it down to, I had it between two guys for Fighter of the Year. Indy Semelier, who gets victories over Muhammad Kamal, Jordan Watson, and Super Bon, and then Mirtha Grunhart. I really looked at all the different candidates. You know, Bokal, as I mentioned, going 7-0. Petrosian going 3-0. Yod going 3-0, retiring, and then now coming back from retirement. I was trying to decide who, you know, and that Kuai Jingling, he had a good year too. But when I look at it, I thought that the decision that made the most sense to me, I really, really like the youngster Indy Semelier as my Fighter of the Year. I wanted to give it to Mirtha Grunhart, but man, I just feel like the victories over Muhammad Kamal, over Watson, over Super Bon, 8-0, 22 years old, young up-and-comer. He's also my breakout star of the year, but Indy Semelier, for me, was the Fighter of the Year. I was really impressed with his resume. Now, Mirtha Grunhart, I think, you know, I'll go ahead. When I put the highlight together, I'll have them split the award. I really like Mirtha Grunhart. I like this story. I like what he did for the year. A lot of good stuff from him. I'll go ahead and split it. I can do it. It's my podcast. Mirtha Grunhart and Indy Semelier will split the Fighter of the Year for 2017 for me. Going to go ahead and go into some of the other action. Comeback of the Year, Comeback Fighter of the Year. There's a lot of different candidates that could possibly come up for this one. Yud Kubo, of course, was once the best 143 fighter in the world. He beat Masaki Nori. He won the Glory Tournament in Japan at that period of time. He beat Kubo. He beat Mahan Dragon. He's definitely a guy who I thought, man, got to have his name on the list for Comeback Fighter of the Year. Murat Grigoryan. I thought Murat Grigoryan really put together a fun 2017 after really just kind of being known as falling short in his title opportunities against Sidichai. I thought he did a really, really good job this past year. I loved the Muhammad Mazari win. The Jump Thong KO was our Jump Thong KO. It was one of the most brutal KOs of the year. That was some sick stuff. Definitely one of the guys that I'd put up there. I had some other options, but I really like Yuta Kubo the best. So Yuta Kubo is my Comeback Fighter of the Year to come back, win that tournament. It was a lot of fun watching him compete, watching him get his hands raised. And after having some tough years, and granted, he ran into Ku Fairtech several times, you're going to have some tough time if you run into that guy. That guy's good. So shout out to him. He really did do a great job. And we'll see what happens with Yuta Kubo moving forward. So the event of the year actually had some really, really good candidates. But I kind of narrowed it down to two that I liked the best. I thought the Glory Redemption card was a lot of fun. And the reason why I liked it was because, as I said before, Rico Verheerven's story at the top. You also had the return fight of, I mean, I won't call it, you know, Fight of the Year this time, but I thought it was a good fight that told a story. And that story is when he's on form and when he goes out there and kickboxes, I can't stress to you enough, Daniel Yunga can fight. He is a really good kickboxer. He goes out there and instead of getting into the bombs away contest that he got in with Michael Duke the previous year, he came out and put on some clean kickboxing and he scored one of the better KOs of the year and one of the cleaner, you know, complete performances from his career. He's a talented guy. He really is. And I want to see more of this dude at the highest level. And to think that this was his first win in Glory in like 2 years, it just blows me away because that's how good he is. But that was an awesome fight in the card. Sugden, of course, young up-and-coming fighter. He gets a victory on that card. And then the Pech Pomerung KO over Zogari was awesome because really the fight was lackluster before that. Pech Pomerung just kept winning with the body kick and the movement. And then the head kick came up. So definitely good stuff. I mean, I really, really was entertained by the whole card, the tournament that they had before it, the upset victory, not upset for me, but the idea that Nicky Holtzgen, who had a rough 2017, He loses to the young up-and-coming star, Limdebaev. You had young stars. You had champions holding strong. I really thought that was a really good card. As far as that being the best card of the year, I thought that that was in competition with the K1 Super Welterweight Tournament. I thought that that tournament really had... it was a complete card. That card had... First of all, most importantly, and again, it used to be called Max before, but Chingiz Alazov wins your tournament, and he's a young star that I've been promoting for so many years. Another guy under 25 years old to add to that list of Nori and Similier and Izbiri and Nasukawa and Bestati. He's another young star to pay attention to moving forward. He wins this tournament. Two awesome KOs on the way to a really solid last fight where he scored two downs. I think three downs in the fight with Yoshihiro Kido. All action there. I mentioned that he had KOs before that. Yoshihiro Kido himself had some KOs before that. The Sonny Dalback KO. It just was a fun tournament. We had Wiru versus Gunapar, one of the fights of the year. For me, very, very entertaining back and forth there. Misaki Nori beats Kufertex to become the best at, what I would consider, I guess him and Robin van Roosmalen would have to compete one day, but he wins that tournament. He wins over a guy who, and he's done it his whole career. He struggled with Kubo, and then he beat Kubo. And he struggled with Nori, Nori struggled with Kao. So good stuff by Misaki Nori, winning the super lightweight title for K1 there. Takuru gets a stoppage over Buziar Baskiev, and the reason why I like that is because, again, it's your big stars. Wiru is already your champion. He defends his title. Misaki Nori, he wins the championship over your current champion, but he's a star in Japan. Takuro, of course, already a star. Tega gets a victory over Koji. Tega, who finally found consistency after struggling with it so long. The storyline of it was really good stuff for me. We had, I'm missing something from this card. There was something else in the card that I wanted to bring up. I cannot find it at the moment. But I felt like this card was the perfect blend of your stars going out and performing well. A title change, the storyline of a guy struggling to win a title weight class, getting the big victory in a split decision and extra round. And then you've got a new star in Chingiz Alazov. I thought that was really good storytelling. So those are the two event of the years for me. There were some good cards throughout. I remember the Kunlun Clash of Titans was really, really solid. It had, good fighters throughout. And just the way that tournament was brought up, Elias Blade, he was in the other bracket. But they got their best fighters out there. And I thought that that's always really, really important for pushing the kickboxing brand. So definitely want to say shout out to Kunlun and their Clash of Titans card. We're now going to move into... I'll go fight of the year, and I'll say KO of the year for last, because KO of the year was, there was, for me, one clear dominant winner for me, but I don't think I'm going to give it the win today, but there was one clean dominant winner in my personal opinion. So I'll go ahead and I'll look at this card, and I'll look at who I feel, fight of the year. I've got a couple interesting candidates, so definitely hear me out in this. So the first one that I want to bring up is Elias Blade versus Pech Lanong. Pech Lanong, it's really a fight that, it's not that there was one clear blowout winner or that it was just crazy, guns blazing back and forth. The reason why I like this fight so much is because Elias Blade came out with a kickboxing clean style, combinations and low kicks, scoring well. He scores a step-up knee, and I can't remember, I think it was in the first, that pushed Pech Lanong down. Pech Lanong then comes out with a strong Thai style of really working the body kicks and the low kicks and the simple strikes, simple power strikes, defense, really believing in the power of the technique, and it was such a perfect blend of style versus style. Elias Blade at the very end, after doing so well early, the power shot slowed him at the end. And in the third round, he had to survive. And Apechlanong loses, but he came back. I thought the down was the difference for Ilias Belaid in a very, very close fight. I bring this fight up because of how awesome it was. Like, I feel like Clash of Styles doesn't get done enough. And I think that this was a really, really good example of it. Weiru versus Gunapar is one of my favorite fights of the year. I thought that it was... Gunapar, of course, is always game to bang it out with anybody. And Weiru, it's almost like they were in reverse worlds. Like, Weiru was the savvy Thai. You know, he was the savvy Thai fighter who had the movement and... The scores and the getting out of there, whereas Gunapar was ready to bang it out. And he found his big shots here and there, but Weiru kept, you know, calming the storm, finding his offense. Calming the storm, finding the offense. It was really, really good stuff. That one stood out to me. There are some other, you know, another real perfect example of it. And this one was really, really close to being my fight of the year. The big time victory for... And another fighter that did a good job of just being a prize fighter in 2017, Anze Banazarov, was in a fight that, I mean, I don't know if I'll call it like the clear-cut fight of the year if you didn't understand the stakes and kind of how it came together. But for me, I really, really liked that this fight as far as, you know, just the kind of story that was told in it. You get Kevin Van Oostrand, this, you know, young American, you know, American fighter, really ticket seller out there in New York. I got to be there for this one live. And he's got this huge fan base. And, of course, he's supposed to be fighting Esbiri because Esbiri won the Lyon tournament. And because that didn't come together, because that didn't happen, I guess, actually he's supposed to fight Robin Van Roosmalen. And because Robin Van Roosmalen is in contract, you know, negotiations and so on, he's thinking about doing MMA full time. The fight doesn't come together. So Kevin Van Oostrand, who won in New York early in the year in the tournament, they had it set up for him to fight for an interim title against Banazarov. The fight comes out, and it's just, I'm telling you, the everything in all sports is a game of inches, if you will. But the storyline, or the story for me to this fight, is early in the fight, Kevin Oostrand, of course, he uses his speed and his quickness, and he plays with karate style offense here and there, and he moves in karate style and moves and a big offense. He tries early on in the fight to do a knee. And like, he tries to score it, and Anvar sees it. And is throwing overhand at the perfect time, scores the overhand before the knee lands, and he goes down. He's clearly out of it. He gets up. Banazarov's throwing heat, trying to get him out of there. And then all of a sudden, head clears up. You know, he's composes himself. Anvar then throws an overhand, but this time Van Oostrand throws a knee, and the knee wins the second exchange. It scores to the body. Anvar stands there chilling for a little bit like he's going to compete, and then drops to his knees and he can't fight anymore. It was only a minute fight, and the crowd went nuts, and I just loved it because, for me, the storytelling of the same shot that got you in trouble a moment ago is the shot that you win the fight with, because a moment ago, they won by just a moment. And this time, you won by just a moment. I love that. So I really thought that, as far as fight of the year, even though it was a minute 5 seconds, I definitely wanted to bring that glory battle up. But for me, fight of the year winner was the first one that I mentioned, Ilias Belaid versus Apechlanong. I love that style. And I kept going back and I go, hey, I don't necessarily need it to be a bang out, don't know what's going to happen next KO fest. You know, I don't necessarily need that. I loved the fight of the year that Dute had with Iyunga. I thought that was a good fight in its year. I thought it was a great back and forth. Don't know what's going to happen next. But I don't necessarily need that. What I do love and what I do appreciate is when I can get a storyline in a fight and it's executed at a high level. And I got a storyline in this fight. And Anissa and Ilias Belaid and Apechlanong gave that story. Also, talking about breakout fighters of the year, even though she had a loss early in the year. Anissa Hedo and her fight with Wang Qihan was the fight of the year for the women. Very, very clear winner for me here. I thought Wang Qihan came out throwing the power shots because that's what she does, and she found her offense early, and then all of a sudden a switch kick gets Hedo back on score. She scored big. Definitely, clearly, you could see that she was visibly hurt, that she visibly hurt Wang Qihan with it. Wang Qihan gets out of the round. Then Wang Qihan came back, scoring the power shots, and this Hedo still fought, you know, combinations with a kick on the end. She scores another shot that gets Qihan in trouble. This time, I believe Qihan goes down in the second round with the switch kick. Third round, Wang Qihan fighting back, trying to get herself back in the card, battling. Still, you get Anissa Hedo finding her offense in moments as Wang fights back. They go to the scorecards, and Anissa Hedo beats Wang Qihan, the KO, you know, queen of the division. Anissa gets a victory over her in China, and I thought that that was just awesome stuff. I love stories like that. I mean, I love when so many things are accomplished in such a, you know, I won't say a short period of time, but such a, you got three rounds, sometimes five, and if you can say, this is more than just punches and kicks, this is what's happening, that's the love of the kickboxing sport. So, Anissa Hedo of Holland and Wang Qihan of China put on my female fight of the year. Also, and I forgot to mention this, as far as female comeback fight of the year, I got to go back to Holland. Melanie Higgins is clearly, by far and away, my female comeback fighter of the year. She is, it's weird because she kept getting big kickboxing opportunities, but she just wasn't showing her best on the highest stage. So whenever she got there, you'd always see something to the effects of she would lose to Iman Barlow, or she would lose to, Anissa Mexen, that type of fighter. She'd get on TV, but she wouldn't get the win. This time, this year, she gets brought out to China. She wins the Crush title. She defends it once, and she lost in December. But between her having MMA success and kickboxing success all year until that December loss, I was really, really pleased with how things went down. Like, I thought that was awesome. I thought that was just a great year, great, great stuff. Comeback fight of the year is Melanie Higgins for the females. I completely forgot. So we're going to go ahead and go into KO of the year, and it's weird because for me, there's only one candidate for this, okay? There are cooler KOs, all right? There was, I'm going to mention some of the really cool savage KOs that you could bring up, but there's really only one candidate for KO of the year. I'm going to wrap this show up on this. All right, so clearly we had, and he emerged as one of the great KO fighters on the planet. Like he put together some really, really good stuff. I thought that Rikyu did a really good job of emerging in Japan this year. Yusuke Takai, I just thought that Victor Saravia, those guys were unfortunately, I mean, Victor Saravia was unfortunately on the bad end of some KOs this year. But I really thought that there was a little bit of a delay in there. Sorry about that. I really thought that Rikyu, between the double kick that he scored and the jumping knee KO that he scored, I thought there was some awesome stuff this year. And as far as he put on, he proved himself to be one of the KO fighters to watch moving forward. I really, really, really was impressed by a lot of his work. Good stuff there. The Takiro KO over Victor Saravia was definitely some brutal stuff. The Bukau KO over Maron Tatu, it was just, oh man, was that vicious. That was a vicious onslaught there. Definitely wanted to bring that one up. The Kui Jingling victory over Sedzikorn, not the one over Kem. I wasn't a big fan of the one over Kem. That one looked like a dive. But the victory, the one over Sedzikorn with the spinning hook kick out of the break, that's some vicious stuff. So definitely that KO. Berhad Gregorian's KO over Jam Dong was just an awesome, I mean, to see a guy like crumple like that is just amazing, you know, just amazing, amazing KO. There were so many that are just kind of floating through my head right now. I don't want to spend the whole show just reliving, you know, some of the bigger KOs, but I'll push forward to a couple more. The I mentioned it before with Chingiz Alazo's Jordan Piquet KO, the hook was just, it was such a well-timed hook, and it was such a silencing KO against a guy who's kind of known as a KO fighter. That one was definitely, definitely big time there. The Antonio Plezibat, his jumping knee KO in the K1 tournament, that was awesome. That was Liver Kick, the kickboxing podcast, that was their KO of the year. So definitely shout out to them and shout out to him for that one. But I broke it down to two. One I'm going to give you guys as far as the entertainment value of it. But the other one was by far and away my champion, and it's not even close. Vlad Tuanov's Rolling Thunder head kick KO was really, really awesome. And I think the thing that made it cooler was the fact that Karkir did not go down. It was the fact that he took the shot and he just kind of stood there like dazed. I thought that was some vicious stuff. You know, I thought that he's a really, really impressive guy. But as far as the moment of it, I only look at it in terms of that. But it didn't hold the weight and the significance. Because I'm trying to even remember if that down scored the end of the fight. But it definitely got it going. There's a couple of other ones I just remember. I've got them written down here. The Chen Chin Lee victory over Hill was definitely the Terrence Hill. That was definitely a mean KO with that overhand right. And then the Pamarong head kick victory over ZZ. Definitely good stuff. I forgot about those. I went back to them because I didn't want to leave them out. They were definitely good stuff for sure. But let me go ahead and get to my upset of the year and KO of the year. This one's not even close. Anvar Bonoizerov's victory KO over Fabio Pinca. Not even close. There is no worthy second place to me. It is such a big, significant KO in my mind. It was awesome. Like, I was blown away by it. So, shout out to them and the level of mental toughness you have to have to get beaten, you know, him and his team to stay on course, because he was getting whooped in round one. Let's just call a spade a spade. He was getting whooped in round one. And he was Fabio Pinca on his way to fighting in America. I'm going to get to see Fabio Pinca fight in New York. I'm already thinking it, because he's just putting on a clinic. He's landing combination kicks. He's just playing around with stuff. Everything's worked. Anvar finally finds a moment to land some power shots. Scores clean. KOs a guy who's never been KO'd before. And gets his hand raised. He then goes on to lose in the next round of the tournament. But I think, if you were to say what was the least likely thing to happen on that whole tournament field and that whole glory kickboxing year, Anvar, even though he's a KO fighter, I did not see him at all beating Fabio Pinca in any way, shape, or form. So that KO, the suddenness, the fact who he did, I just sat there kind of like stunned, staring on my TV. That was for sure for me my upset of the year and the KO of the year, and a really good stuff, and a really good, fun kickboxing year. So that should wrap my show up. I definitely want to mention a couple things going away. I mentioned Kui Jin Liang and the things that he's doing in China. China's continuing to emerge as one of the kickboxing powers in the world, continuing to push guys like, you know, Chen Chen Li. Glory's going to go there twice this year. I also need to mention another moment that just, if I were just talk about moments, Sidichai, he had a really good year, beating Askarov, beating Dylan Salvador, beating Enrico Kiel, and most importantly, Sidichai beating Li Yong. And Li Yong, of course, we talked about before, Li Yong gets decisions that shouldn't go his way, and they hype him as a star. He's probably the biggest kickboxing star in all of China, even though he's not even close to being the best kickboxer. I think people wanted him to get what he deserved. You know, they wanted him to lose, because he kept getting decisions that they felt he shouldn't have got. And finally, you get this fight, you get this moment, and I started to realize, okay, this is the fight that if he doesn't go out there and win by stoppage, Li Long's going to have a victory over the glory champion. And then they could pretty much say he's the best player fighter on the planet after that. If you watch the broadcast, if there's a fight going on, they had a tournament to see who would get to fight him, and they're showing him watch the fights from the crowd and his kind of response to it. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, dude, you're not even the best fighter in China. Not even close. Yi Long's not even in the top 10 of fighters in China. And yet he's getting this promotional push because of the monk angle. I think a lot of people wanted him to get his, you know, comeuppance. They wanted him to lose. And Sitting Shy did the entire kickboxing world a favor by beating the brakes off of Yi Long and stopping him with a brutal head kick. That one, I sort of wanted on the list, but that was me being petty. I can't have it on the list and be petty like that. So I had to remove myself and my thinking from that decision and just go with, okay, really good stuff by, in my personal opinion, really, really good stuff on the scorecards. I got myself mixed up. Really good stuff getting the stoppage and avoiding the scorecards that were coming his way if he didn't get a victory there, if he didn't get a clear stoppage victory. It just didn't happen. So Sitting Shy goes out there, gets a really, really big victory. I was really pleased with that. I forgot to mention it on the show earlier. Definitely wanted to say shout out to him. Shout out to Kun Loon, who still puts on more kickboxing shows than anybody. They do a really good job all year of doing shows. They do like 3 shows a month sometimes. So they're definitely doing good stuff. So much respect due to them and the efforts that they've put in as far as getting kickboxing out there and really pushing that brand. So definitely shout out to them. And shout out to all my listeners. I'm so grateful for you guys to come back to listen to my podcast on a regular basis, to support what I do, because I really do love kickboxing and I'm going to do everything in my power to push the sport. This is a good episode to give to friends, and my next week episode will be something similar. I'll have some results in there. Like, there was some kickboxing that went down just yesterday. We're already back at it. You know, we're off and running as far as the kickboxing year goes. So I will bring you some kickboxing action moving forward for sure. Don't worry about it. I got you. But this episode, I wanted to be a year in review one. The K1, the kickfighting highlight comes out next, not this week, but the week after it. I've got a fighter on the Boston card here in the UFC, so I'll be working that fight event. And then I'll get that out. And then I will also do my best to talk to someone, as I usually do every year, about the stadium, the year in stadiums. I'll get that person in. We'll do that episode. Definitely have that in there. And then I'll talk about a year preview, what I want to expect, what I'm looking forward to, what I hope happens in 2018. Thank you all for listening so much. God bless and have a good one. Peace.